Sorry.
Uh,
Oh.
the Commission on Equitable Housing and Development meeting is now commenced. It is December 7th at 4 p.m. This meeting is being held virtually due to COVID-19 to allow for social distancing and to protect the public health. As we continue our efforts in meeting remotely, we ask all commissioners and guests to mute yourself until called upon to speak to avoid feedback and background noise. For those who have dialed in using the call-in number, to unmute to speak, dial star six on your phone. Also, prior to speaking, please announce who you are to identify yourself. As a reminder, this meeting is being recorded. We ask that you only use the chat function to request to speak or to announce that you're leaving the meeting so we can track quorum. Also, to comply with the state open meeting laws, attendance and votes will be done by way of roll call using audio, not by using the chat function. We're going to do roll call. Maggie Amato-Tellez.
Present.
Wendy Asher.
Present.
Marianne Beerling.
Present.
Mindy Bernstein.
She had excused herself.
Right. Mark Clark. Mark's not here. Vicky Casino. Vicky's absent. Lori Meserbo.
Present.
Tisha Tallman. Tisha's going to be here. I talked to her a little bit ago. Jim Topol, I'm here. Ray Winch.
Present.
Kenny Wong.
Present.
And Jay Young.
I'm here.
Next official member is Ann Shenanka.
Anne is here. She's just running around the office.
And Mark is here.
Mark. Corin Manning.
Present.
Betty Villegas. Chris Ismail. Okay, so our second agenda item is the review and adoption of the October meeting minutes, November. Okay, so there's nothing in the November meeting minutes, but we need to, I guess, approve those as well. So the minutes are on the website. Are there any changes to the October meeting minutes?
I move to approve.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. I'm just going to say without objection, the minutes are approved. I'll go through a vote. Are there any objections to approving the minutes? Okay. And Tisha's here too now. Okay. The minutes are approved. So we'll go to the third agenda item, which is the call to audience. And this is a time when any member of the public may address the Commission on Equitable Housing and Development. Time constraints, the total time allocated for this is 15 minutes. Individuals are allowed up to 3 minutes each. Due to open meeting laws, commission members cannot discuss topics that are not on the agenda, but items brought up by the public may be considered an agenda for a future meeting. So is there anybody who would like to speak?
Jim, I do not see any hands up. Joe Audino's not here.
That's a first. Okay. So move on to the fourth agenda item, which is an update on our meeting with the mayor's office. We had that on November 15th. Took us a little bit to get on our calendar. But I thought the meeting went really well. Ann was there along with Jay and I. And we talked a lot about our goal setting and, you know, where she sees the commission. And I think there was two kind of key points I was trying to hammer home with her, which is that we really need guidance from mayor and council for goal setting for the commission. You know, initially, one of the key goals that we had as a commission was to provide recommendations to mayor and council on things that the city could do to get more affordable housing in the city. And we spent a lot of time going through that. We came forward with the five recommendations, and I reviewed those with her again. And you know, the problem is there's not more, you know, there's diminishing returns in terms of the number of things that can be done. So it's not that there's not additional things the city can do, but the items that we brought up, I think we're going to provide the most bang for the buck with the city. And, you know, it'd be nice to see those things get implemented before we start making more recommendations on other things that they should be doing. So, you know, the comment I made was, I don't think it's our responsibility to try to hold mayor and council's feet to the fire on doing those things. You know, I think it'd be nice for us to track how the progress is going, but, you know, we really need some direction from them on, you know, where should we be focused going forward? And so she did give us some good feedback. She said that she was open to participating in our retreat. And so I'm hoping we're going to work with her scheduler to see if she can attend the retreat, maybe help open that for us. I think that would be really great if we had that direct interaction with her. We also talked about getting, you know, more participation from other city council members in this meeting on a regular basis. And, you know, maybe it's every 2 to 3 months we have one of the city councilors. What am I trying to say? Council members attend this meeting and just listen to what they have to say, and they can talk to us about what's on their agenda. A couple of asks that the mayor had of us. She wanted to see, she asked us to work on collaborating a little bit better with the Pima County Housing Commission, and whether that's a couple of our representatives attending their commission meeting or a couple of their representatives attending ours is to be determined. Maybe we do both. But specifically, she wanted us to talk to the County Affordable Housing Commission about an affordable housing bond initiative and see if that's something that we could collaborate on together between the city and the county. So she gave us a couple names of people to talk to. The other thing that she said that as a city that they want to do more is start having town halls. And she asked for us to, she wants to include CEHD on community engagement. So yeah, I thought that was interesting. Jay, do you want to talk about the equity side and so what those conversations were?
Yeah, sure. You know, as Jim said, I thought the meeting was very productive. I felt like the mayor was very engaged with all of the topics that we brought up, and you know, expressed her. I guess that she really valued the commission and the work that we were doing. So I thought that was really nice. But, you know, in addition to engaging more with the community, you know, I thought that she was very understanding of equity issues related to housing. you know, how the city and the county kind of work together, the differences in incomes from folks living in the county versus the city, and some of the struggles, just that I think the structural nature of some of the struggles, and just in terms of how jurisdictions are.
I think we lost Jay.
People need, yeah.
Oh, sorry, we lost you for a second. Keep going.
So, and I think she expressed an interest in having us to direct her more, mayor and council more regarding equity issues. We talked a little bit about the county's prosperity initiative. But I guess overall, just I was impressed with how tuned in she was with the issues and her the desire she expressed for us to
Okay, so Jay's having some internet issues. The thing that I thought that she you back?
Oh, sorry, was I frozen for a while?
Yeah.
What did you guys hear? I probably didn't say anything that important while I was frozen, so.
You were talking about how the difference between income levels between within the city limits and outside.
Yeah, I just think that ultimately I thought that she was very in tune with equity issues, that being one. Also, just with the how important it is to think about where housing is being built, who it's being built for, who has access to it, you know, that it's connected to opportunity. And, you know, really thinking about where are areas that have been disinvested, what kind of investment could be made in different parts of town that maybe have been overlooked in the past. And just generally, I think she expressed a desire for us to provide, you know, as the commission, more guidance to mayor and council regarding, you know, how we were perceiving equity issues related to housing and you know, potentially what could be done about some of those issues. So I thought it was a very hopeful meeting, and yeah, I walked away feeling good and feeling like at least, you know, she felt like we were an integral part of what's going on with housing in Tucson and you know, continued engagement and more engagement with mayor and council about these issues would be much appreciated.
The other two asked, so it was, you know, what parts of town should the city be focused on in terms of building housing? I think HCD has a lot of that information at hand. The other two asks though were, you know, is there office, like the two areas where she felt like we might be able to have some input is adaptive reuse projects. So where you've got hotels that can be converted into housing or office space that can be converted into apartments or just sites in general that maybe there's a better use. So empty parking lots, things like that. So Mark, you want to jump?
So with regard to the County Commission, I'm actually the Vice Chair of the County Commission. I represent the County Administrator on that commission. Sarah Magason also is a commissioner. Ben, you're a commissioner too. Ben's a commissioner, and Marcos is there also. So there is some overlap with the County Commission. Happy to carry some of that. Communications would like to know a little more about. I think I wouldn't be surprised if there was an interest on the county side or the bond issue as well. So.
Randy, there.
I didn't hear you. I like the idea of having, now we know Mark is on that commission to, you know, give an update to our monthly meeting. I think that's a great idea, and vice versa, you know, that there's an update from our meeting to Pima County. I like that she's willing to be at the retreat. I also like the idea of having, you know, council person, you know, one a month at our meetings to become educated about that. The town halls are a little dicey. But if we were able to go to the town hall to educate people, you know, and address the myths of affordable housing, I think that, you know, that is a good use of people's time from time to time. You know, her interest in the least served markets is good. One of the things you said, Jim, about holding their feet to the fire, I would like for our next meeting for us to review the approved recommendations, you know, that we made to the city council and what the progress on them are. I think that we need to know that. So I'm asking for that to be on our next agenda. Right. That's all I've got.
Thank you. I think the only other thing I wanted to say about the meeting is we did throw some ideas out on different things that the commission could be held accountable for. So the example I gave was if they do a $2 million city-backed housing trust fund, maybe that's something that could work through the commission. That would be something that would put us in the position where we have to, you know, help make recommendations on specific projects and a little bit more granular level of detail on what's happening in the city. So, any other thoughts or comments on this agenda item?
I love the idea of that more direct relationship there, especially on specific conversations like a bond initiative, and even like having that as an agenda item where we're intentionally inviting to a meeting to talk about collaborations. I think in addition to having the cross-pollination of members on both, it would be nice, yeah, to have that as an explicit item. Thanks for bringing it up.
Yeah. Okay, so I think that's actually a pretty good segue into agenda item number 5, which is an overview on the housing trust fund, which was one of the 5 recommendations made to Mayor and Council last February. So Sarah, you want to take it away?
Yeah, and I'm actually going to have Anne kick it off to start. I'll share my screen, and then Anne will. We're going to bookend it. She's going to start and finish with all the stuff in the middle.
Yeah, Marianne and Jim, I think you both really queued us up quite well for this item. So we wanted to, one of the items that was on your list to Mayor and Council was trying to have the city re-engage with the city's housing trust fund. And so one of the many, many tasks I've given Sarah Megason, as she's had a lot on her plate this past year, is to really do some research on, you know, when the Housing Trust Fund was established before, what was the funding mechanisms, what were the policies and procedures, and really, as we go down the path of trying to reestablish the trust fund, learn from what happened before. As a planner, I do have a philosophy of doing engagement and getting input early and often. So we haven't yet taken anything to Mayor and Council in terms of asking them to reestablish the Housing Trust Fund. Before we do that, we really wanted to get input from you all, really initial input. I think the biggest question is going to be a sustainable funding source. And so, and some of those decisions are some technical decisions and some policy decisions. So Sarah's going to walk through what she learned in terms of before to really put this in motion. And our goal is to take it, you know, in 2024, take it to mayor and council to have it be reestablished. And so with that, I think Sarah's going to jump in and give a presentation really about the history of the city's housing trust fund to cue up the conversation.
Yep. Thank you, Anne. So just to kind of start from the very basics, what is the housing trust fund? Typically, they are established short sources of funding created by governments. The goals of them are to support construction, acquisition, and preservation of affordable housing. Also working to meet the needs of low-income households. Ideally, they're funded through dedicated revenue sources, and there's over 500 of them that exist across the country today. So the city of Tucson created a housing trust fund back in 2006. One theme that Allison and I keep saying is what's old is new. You know, we don't have any brand new ideas typically. We just sort of regurgitate what's happened before. At that time in 2006, the Metropolitan Housing Corporation and mayor and council the board was made up of the Metropolitan Housing Corporation and mayor and council working to appoint the board that was created, which they called the Tucson Housing Trust Fund Citizen Advisory Committee. I don't know how I would pronounce that acronym, but that's what it was. There was a sunsetting of that advisory committee in 2011. And then in 2013, there was a development agreement through the Gadsden development in the Mercado area. And that was a source of revenue that was created at that time. So kind of to dive in a little bit more about it, there were the program designs presented in 2006 were for three areas, each using 33% of the funds: home improvement, first time home buyer, and rental preservation and rental development programs. The original proposed funding sources were sale of city owned properties, fee on conversion of rental properties, and then monies as may be appropriated from time to time by mayor and council. So all of this was a part of all of the communications I pulled from the clerk's office from that time when it was approved. So in 2011, the advisory committee was sunsetted. That was partially due to really difficulty forming quorum often. It was a very large advisory committee. And it was just like pulling teeth, trying to get everybody together all the time. And so they decided to sunset it. The Metropolitan Housing Corporation took over as sort of the de facto board of the Housing Trust Fund for a while. In 2013, the Gadsden real estate purchase agreement was created. And at that time, a point of sale contribution for affordable housing was implemented. So 1% of sales prices of all residential units in the phases in the Gadsden project were paid through escrow to the City of Tucson Housing Trust Fund. And as of June 30th, the balance of the trust fund is $312,000. $312,000 approximately. And we continue to get little sort of injections of funding through this 1% sales. We haven't dove in totally into like the history of all the payments, but I do have a spreadsheet and, you know, we do know what our balance is at this time. So moving forward, sort of, you know, what we're here to talk to you all about to showcase is really, what are the goals for the programming for the program if we were to, when we reinstate it, and how to move forward? Definitely housing development related activities, down payment assistance, inclusive of diverse affordability levels, and regular evaluation and public reporting on how funds are used. We're working to propose that the Commission on Equitable Housing and Development, you all, would be the multi-stakeholder oversight board. And then, you know, the one sort of big thing is what is the dedicated recurring revenue source? So I did some research. We did a lot of research. We have a big giant spreadsheet. What are dedicated revenue sources in other housing trust funds? across the country. We typically see housing bonds and general obligation bonds being a major source of funding. Typically, that's the large injection at the beginning, and then the other stuff that sort of fuels it over time. But that big lump sum of a bond really helps kickstart the housing trust funds. Tempe, Arizona, as an example on this list, does a development donation program. So they don't necessarily charge in lieu fees, but they do provide developers to donate to their housing trust fund as a tax write-off. And then also we see a lot of like different types of taxes and permit fees, et cetera. Portland, Oregon has a short-term rental tax, which we can't do. Some of these things we can't do because of the state requirements. But they do have the inclusionary housing fund with in lieu fees that come up through development. And then construction excise taxes and other taxes as well. But you can see Albuquerque, Kansas City, and Flagstaff really all have that general obligation bond too. When we put this PowerPoint online for you, I'm also going to include Kansas City, Missouri's report, which has a huge list of all sorts of different funding source ideas. So we'll be sure to include that in the materials for you all to look at. It's a very long report, but very detailed, and definitely want to refer to that and not try to reinvent the wheel because it has a lot of great ideas in it. And so with that, I'm going to toss it back to Anne to kind of tee you all off for discussion. And yeah, any open for any questions and thoughts.
And I do see Ray has a question. I'll be super quick here. Just, you know, on our end, we're doing the research. We know that there's funding, but really we need to rewrite the policies and procedures to be able to spend the small amount of funding that's there now. And so everything right now, we just really wanted to get preliminary input from you all. This will take mayor and council action. And so given that you all provide recommendations to mayor and council, we really wanted to kick off this conversation and hear your thoughts there. And yeah, so I feel like I just lost my train of thought there, but I see lots of questions. I'll turn it back over to you, Jim, in terms of facilitating some input.
Okay, I don't know who raised their hand first. I thought it was Ray, but.
I think Ray has had their hand up for a while.
Thank you so much. Sarah, I'm wondering if you could go back to the slide about how the original bond funds were used. I didn't fully understand what purposes they had been used for in the past.
Yep. Let me get to that slide real quick.
The one, as you're doing that, Sarah, too, Marcos, I don't know if you were there before, like some of you on this commission were pulling documents and filling in gaps that there may be folks that can fill in some of those gaps that have been around. So just recognizing we're doing a lot of this via historic documents. So just throwing that up there.
And the document that we found was sort of the proposal of the programming, right? It was all of the sort of guidelines for the program, plan program designs. And 33% of the funds went to home improvement. So we do have a home repair program currently. I think, you know, it probably, I don't know if we got home funds back then or not, but it was like for home improvement, home repair projects. 33% went to first-time home buyer down payment assistance, probably. And then 33% went to rental preservation and rental development programs. So like gap financing, sort of how we do also right now with our home funds, providing, you know, $500,000 to $2 million, depending on the project, but it was mostly for rental development projects and providing gap financing.
Would that be like the city's share of towards a LIHTC project?
I think that could be that. Right now we award through our home program or our home ARPA program. I think at that time it was sort of the same thing. Like the right now the QAP for the state requires that the city also commit or, you know, yeah, provide funding to low income housing tax credit projects. I don't know if that's always been the case for QAP in the past, but I know that gap funding for rental projects was always a thing, and that was what was prioritized in the program designs in 2006.
Thank you.
Mary Ann?
So you were mentioning that the Housing Trust Fund monies were overseen by the Metropolitan Corporation. It was actually the Housing Commission. The corporation, I think, was a nonprofit set up by the city of Tucson. So when we took over the trust fund, there, you know, it wasn't a lot of money. It wasn't $500,000 or $600,000 for rental development and things like that. It wasn't used to fill gaps for tax credit projects. And the money was really geared toward the smaller needs, like the homeowner improvements and first-time home buyer, very small amounts of money. But it's nice to know there's a balance, and I would ask that we keep that balance as a way to start us off, you know, in the future, as opposed to rewriting something and using that balance. And one idea that I saw was this rehab loan repayment. So I'm wondering, you know, we've become debt equity housing developers. It's, you know, we have all this debt, repaying, you know, loans now that are turned into loans, you know, to the city and to the county versus them being forgivable. So I'm thinking, you know, if we, for that money that is being repaid through this housing projects that we have running, if a percentage of that should go into the housing trust fund. So, you know, we have a 2% on the notes that, you know, are not based on cash flow, and they're, you know, they accumulate. That's a pretty penny that the city gets back. And I think we should look really seriously at using a portion of that to put into the housing trust fund. And I also like the idea of the the development donation program. And I'm wondering if there's a way in the bond initiative to put a percentage of that toward the housing trust fund. So those are just my ideas. And is somebody taking notes?
This has been recorded.
Okay.
Marcos?
Just a few comments. From what I recall, most of the Housing Trust Fund money went to down payment assistance that was available. And I'm thinking the initial funds that became available were from the condo conversion fees. So rentals converted to condominiums. But that ended real quick when the recession hit. The other thing that I'd like to learn more about is the use of the bond funds. So when, you know, the county started a housing trust fund and you know, back in around the same time, 2004, 2005, I think it was 2005 in our case, our housing commission was tasked with identifying a permanent funding stream. Initially, the county thought that the general obligation bonds that were earmarked for affordable housing could become an initial, you know, infusion into the housing trust fund. But the advice we got from our bond counsel was that general obligation bonds could not be used to fund a housing trust fund. And the reason being was that in a housing trust fund, you know, the money that's in there is going to earn interest. And so you know, there were issues with general obligation bond rules. So when we get general obligation bond proceeds, we can't turn around and loan that money out. And then I think the other thing was we couldn't earn interest on it. So those were the reasons that we did not include our bond funds as part of our housing trust fund. I'd be interested to learn more how the other jurisdictions are working around the IRS rules related to, general obligation bonds. And I don't know if our, you know, if rules differ from state to state, it's my understanding that there are some rules that apply across the board, related to the IRS. I could be mistaken. You know, there could be some specific statutes, that are come into play for Arizona that other states don't have to deal with. But, I know that that was a big sticking point for the county. The funding source we ended up identifying got shot down a couple of years after it was implemented. First, the air was let out of the tires by the recession. Our fee was going to be based on a percentage of sales of single family homes. And, but the problem was through the negotiations, the builders, lobby was successful in having that contribution paid at the time the property was sold to a buyer, home buyer, versus when they pulled permits. So while we got our agreement embedded in a lot of, development agreements, the market turned, the recession hit, before any properties could be built or sold. So, the other source that we had was, there was some surplus land. The county had invested in an affordable housing project and liens were put in place that if those properties were sold within, 10 years, we would collect a portion of the investment back. So we did get some funds back from that. And I think there was one or two properties that ended up making a contribution before we ended the program due to, potential legal challenges. Our program was, you know, at least the contribution fees that we put in place were pulled back in 2012, I believe. So, yeah, and we're I think in the same spot trying to figure out where we could get funding. A lot of jurisdictions I know, a couple of others that through participation with the Association of Counties have relied on infusion of general funds to get their trust funds going. You know, the county, of course, approved $5 million in general funds, but decided not to put it into the housing trust fund because there are some additional limitations that would be put in place if we did so. But that's something that could be implemented going forward. And then lastly, on Mary Ann's suggestion, with regards to the liens and repayment of interest, most of those, I think, are from the home program. So repayments from the home program become home program income and could not be, it's not the same as general funds. If there were, you know, land given to a project, you know, that's different, or general funds provided. So, you know, if the county, for example, made loans with our general funds, repayments on those could become part of the housing trust fund. So I think those are things that we'll be looking at, as well as some other, you know, the ideas brought forth, I think that you shared on from City of Tempe, I think has implemented, kind of like a three phase. They have like three funding streams that they've identified the sale of surplus property, the voluntary contributions, and then their portion of their building permit fees. So, you know, it might take a multi-pronged approach, I think, such as the city of Tempe has done, combining a couple of different sources to make it successful. So, but yeah, I think definitely surplus land is something that should be looked at. And, you know, if the land is not going to be made available for affordable housing, if there's a higher and better use, like maybe it has more value as a commercial property and is not in a place suitable for affordable housing, then that land could be sold and the proceeds or a portion of the proceeds could become part of the housing trust fund. Yeah, I think those are my thoughts.
That's good. That's good input. So, I guess I just want to share a couple thoughts that I have. So first of all, thank you for the presentation. Even though I was on the Metropolitan Housing Commission for the last year, I don't remember that it was responsible for the Housing Trust Fund back then, but it's been a while. But the core issue that I heard, and the thing that's really holding this up, is that we need a sustainable funding source. If we had a sustainable funding source, then, you know, this would be something that I think everybody's going to be on board with. So obviously the first and the best option is a bond measure. And we saw that on the presentation. But by the way, Sarah, when you send out that presentation, if you could include all the ideas, I think it was from Oregon, of all the different things that they thought could be done. But I've got two other ideas of potential recurring funding sources. So, Corin, I'm kind of shooting from the hip, so don't be mad at me here. This is a bad idea. I understand. But the first would be through development services. Santa Fe actually has a program in place where either a developer has to put in a certain number of affordable housing units, or they contribute to a fund to fund affordable housing through the city. And I'm not saying that that's what we want to do, but that's how they do it. You know, the city of Tucson enacted new fee structure for impact fees. And the impact fees on multifamily are the same as impact fees on single family residential. I think it's clear from a fire and a police perspective, the apartment and a house have about the same impact on those groups. I think an argument could be made that an apartment complex should not have the same impact fee for parks and rec. A lot of apartment complexes, especially market rate ones, have their own amenities on site. And so the tenants tend to not use the city parks as much as those who live in a house. So that, I think, is a potential source if, you know, I don't know how that's being accounted for. But the other potential way to get it through development services is, you know, we're talking about one of the recommendations that we made was zoning changes and having more flexibility in terms of setbacks, parking requirements, building heights, things like that. And maybe there's something that can be done where if people want a reduction in parking or want certain zoning relaxation, you could say, there's a potential fee that can be put towards a housing trust fund. Maybe that's a bad idea. I don't know. I'm just kind of shooting off the head here. But I think looking at development services is one potential source. The other, in terms of the sale of property, I agree with what Marcos said. You know, the city of Tucson has a lot. How many houses do you guys manage, Anne? Over 1,000, right?
No, 2,000.
2,000. 2,000. And those are very, very expensive to maintain. So, you know, one of the things Ann and I have talked about a little bit was if there was a way to set those houses up through a land trust where there could be a sale to keep them affordable as an affordable for sale, but then also generate some revenue back to the city, that could be an additional source. I don't know if that's feasible or not. So those are my ideas, maybe good, maybe bad. Marianne?
I like Marcos's point on the proceeds on the sale of land that's not made available for affordable housing. I have a question on when home loans are repaid. You're saying it's automatically reverts to home money, but I thought there was it at some point it's not home money anymore. And so I'm wondering if the city, maybe in a future meeting, could let us know exactly when you're putting an interest on taxpayers' money that comes through home, what happens to the repaid funds and the interest. I would really like to know what happens. I never even thought about that until Marcos brought this up. So if that could be something you guys research and get back to us about, that would be great. Jim, if we're asking for setbacks and reduced parking, we're asking for setbacks to be able to pencil out and build more units. And if we're asking to reduce parking, it's because the people we serve don't have vehicles, which means the rents are really low. And sometimes we're not charging utilities. So to ask, you know, an affordable housing project to pay a fee for that kind of defeats our purpose. Just saying.
I was thinking that was on the market really, so not be affordable.
Okay.
Right.
And a question about your point, Jim, of having city properties sold through a land trust. And just for clarification there, were those mostly then the public housing properties that would be sold for affordable home ownership?
Yeah, those, I mean, my understanding is those properties are extremely expensive to maintain. Mm-hmm. Apartment complex, you can have a property manager maintain, you know, several hundred units, whereas mm-hmm. you have, you know, just the commute time to get to a place, and there's inherent inefficiencies in terms of maintaining a lot of single family residents. So it's difficult for the city financially, but we need to have it structured in a way where they maintain their affordability.
Yeah, it's my concern there, maybe, and if you want to jump in, it looks like you're about to speak there, is it's like who benefits from those different programs, like a public housing benefiting, my understanding, like a lower income than someone who's usually able to purchase through a land trust, who may also be low income, but not in the same income category as someone who'd qualify for public housing, if one of you would want to clarify that.
Yeah, and Ray, I think I have the same thought there in terms of, I realize, I appreciate putting everything on the table in terms of the conversation about the single family homes and public housing. There's really strict rules about what we can and can't do with any of that money. And really, it would go into supporting our existing public housing. Supporting extremely low income households. I do appreciate, though, thinking out of the box and brainstorming, because I think you've heard challenges with a lot of the different potential revenue sources. And so one thing I appreciate hearing the ideas. One thing Sarah and I can do is work with our finance department and our attorney's office and just sort of vetting what what possibilities, some of the ones that you raised today, we could explore further and come back at a future meeting after we've had more of those conversations based on the input we heard today.
Thank you.
Marcus?
Yeah, you know, just the revisiting the home program income. So, you know, the rules that HUD gives us on that just say that we have to reinvest the money in affordable housing. They have to be home eligible projects. And, you know, we have to identify how we're going to use those funds in our annual action plan and consolidated plans. You know, right now the county, we've included in our plan that all of our home program income would be reinvested in the down payment assistance program. And then I think the other thing is that the program income is still subject to all the other federal cross-cutting regulations. But you know, there might be a possibility. We'd have to get I don't know if it's possible the home program income could be used to, you know, fund a home eligible project through the housing trust fund. You know, I'm sure it could. I'm just not sure if we could actually put that money into a trust fund where it would earn interest on the trust fund account. So that's where I think there might be a sticking point with HUD. We're not in a good, you know, there's a lot of new staff at HUD, so I'm not optimistic that there would be any possibilities there, but just wanted to answer Mary Ann's question on what happens to those funds. And you know, I'm not sure where the city's program income, I think, has been reinvested in a lot of other development projects. But for the county's part, we've been putting it back to down payment assistance. And so, that's it. But, you know, that's something we can definitely check into and, you know, try and see if there is a way to make that happen. So, and Jason might have something to add on that.
I can clarify a little about how the city uses PI as well, or program income, as well as just kind of a couple of the obstacles that may be in the way of being able to make it, be able to seed the housing trust fund. So one is Marcos mentioned that all of the federal home rules apply, including eligibility, all of those things. Whereas I think the housing trust fund's goal is to be broader than that most restrictive that is home. And so being able to segregate funds and make sure that those funds would be used for that purpose. The other is that program income funds have to be used within the next program year after they're acquired. They're the first funds we have to use before we can draw any other home funds. So if we were putting in the housing trust fund, it would have to be rapidly in and out. So just another potential obstacle, not something that couldn't be overcome, but, and then in terms of how we use program income at the city, it cycles back into either affordable rental housing development or down payment assistance. Those are the two places we generally put it. We keep our options open, but those are the kind of general go-to spots that we drop that funding, just seeing them as some of the most critical needs and opportunities with home.
Thank you. Any other final comments before we move to the next agenda item? Running a little bit behind schedule here. Okay, well, thank you, Sarah. Appreciate the presentation. That was very informative. So we're going to move down to agenda item number 6, which is the discussion on the affordable housing process. Ben Carpenter.
Hi, everybody.
Hey.
Thanks. I'm just going to take a few minutes to talk through our process for funding affordable housing, rental housing development. And that is, I'm sorry, I'm the community development manager. My name is Ben Carpenter. I oversee the community development block grant program, as well as the home investment partnerships. The home investment partnerships, which you all were just talking about a little bit, was a great segue to jump into what is the primary vehicle for us to be able to support the creation of affordable housing on a municipal level. And the home program was primarily created to support the creation, acquisition, and rehabilitation of housing for rental and home ownership activities, supporting low-income families exclusively. It can also be used for tenant-based rental assistance, as well as down payment assistance, which is a homeowner subsidy. Commonly, we call that down payment assistance that we administer through our partner housing counseling agencies. The way that we support the creation of affordable rental housing in the community is by putting out an annual request for proposals for rental housing for low-income households. We primarily are funding and providing gap financing for low-income housing tax credit projects, but also other projects not involved with the low-income housing tax credits process can apply. And the key here is that any of that funding must result in the creation or rehabilitation of additional units of affordable housing for low-income families in the community. And the way that we put out the RFP is out right now. We put it out on a cycle to match up with the low-income housing tax credit application process. We issue the request for proposals to the community through the PCHIP process on the PCHIP website. That RFP is currently open right now, and we are accepting applications. Applications are due on the 20th of December. Once all applications are received, we will evaluate those applications based on a very specific evaluation criteria rubric that is laid out in the request for proposals document at the PCHIP site. And through that evaluation process, we then recommend to mayor and council the funding for those individual projects. What we would like to do this year is to incorporate the commission into the evaluation process. We've written a requirement into the request for proposals for developers to bring a presentation no longer than 10 minutes to the commission. And then we would ask the commission to score on a set of evaluation criteria laid out in January to receive those proposals. And then as a part of the overall evaluation, the commission would assign a point value between 0 and 25 to each project based on evaluation criteria that we would provide as a part of the overall evaluation so that we can gain the recommendation and evaluation of the commission on this round of funding recommendations. And so wanted to get your thoughts on that. And this is kind of a trial first run of how we start to incorporate the commission into the evaluation of projects that are proposed for funding.
Thank you, Ben.
Can I just, one quick thing to chime in is understandably lack of quorum last month, but we did try to take this to you before we released it to sort of talk through this, and without being able to do that meeting timing wise, we just had to get it out. But definitely heard, if you recall folks that were around last year, we did our process and then came to the commission, and there was a lot of interest on having more information earlier in the process. So that's, we're really trying to hear what you said last year and have a incorporate you earlier into the process this year.
Thank you. Marianne?
Yeah. I'm sorry that we had that, we didn't have the meeting so that you guys could do that. So I appreciate the fact that you were ready. Couple questions, you know, what if somebody on this commission is submitting a project, including the city of Tucson, you know, using home funds, itself for its own project. So, you know, what's the procedure for that, and how is the city of Tucson working with that as well? Because it's really kind of asking for its own funds.
So I'm happy to field that, Marianne. So to the point of the first question of if a member of the commission is conflicted, for lack of a better word, so has a conflict of interest because They are submitting a proposal. They are going to be a prime or a subcontractor on that proposal. So anyone who is conflicted or has the capacity to become conflicted, like, you know, like reasonably suspects they could become a prime on a project, would will abstain from the process. They can certainly sit in the presentations, but will sort of read a conflict of interest statement prior to the presentations and have each member of the commission self-identify conflicts. And then those folks would abstain. In this portion of the evaluative criteria, city staff will not be participating. You know, partially sure to the point that you made that we would also be conflicted. But also, you know, we are charged with evaluating proposals, including our own. In this piece, we really want the commission's voice to be what these 25 points represent. And so city staff wouldn't be voting in that.
So let me ask, you know, the city started its own nonprofit, and it's competing with other nonprofits and developers. And the home money is scarce as it is. Is the city putting in an application in this RFP?
I'm happy to field that. The city, our co-developer, likely will be putting in an application. And as you said, overall, in terms of available resources, personally, I would like to think we're not competing, since we're all working towards the same mission of getting more affordable housing units out there.
Well, it is a competition. We're all competing for points. So we are competing against each other. Unfortunately, that's the way the system is working.
I think there are some precautions that are taken, Marianne. So the team that works on proposals is not the team that works on the evaluation criteria or that reviews applications and doesn't participate for that very reason that she would, you know, there's no ability for her to be non-conflicted. And in this year's proposal, one of the things we did was establish a choice neighborhood set aside because we knew there would be this, you know, we kind of anticipated this concern. So there's a set aside in the RFP for projects that support choice neighborhoods, because those are the projects that we're applying for, so that there is sort of less competition, and we're acknowledging there is a part of this funding that will likely support city, or in this case, the city's co-developers applications.
One other thing I'd point out there too is last year, we have yet to have a year where in the last couple of years where we had more proposals than we could fund. I wish I could say otherwise. I really feel like we need more developers coming to the table. But I think that's an important piece here is we want to be using as much money as we can towards developing new units.
So from my perspective, Ben and Ann and Jason, I love the fact that you guys are bringing this to the commission. I will have to recuse myself from that portion of the discussion. I think it's great that you guys are going to involve the commission in that. And I was going to also just make the same point that you made is, you know, there's $2 million in home funds that are getting allocated, correct, Ben? And each project to get maximum points for the LIHTC is 500,000. So the city can support up to 4 projects. And I'm hopeful that we will get 4 applications this year. I'm not sure that there's going to be 4 applications that come in. So it may be a very easy task. If there's actual decisions that need to be made, then it's going to be a little bit more complicated task than actually reviewing the submittals and trying to make a determination on which ones do we think are going to have the highest likelihood of being successful when they get submitted for tax credits. I think that's the way I would look at it is which projects do we think are going to most likely receive awards. So. Marianne?
There's this big assumption out there, you guys, this is all going towards tax credit, and there's other projects that can be built that aren't tax credits. And that's my concern is, you know, for the reuse of, you know, motels or for smaller parcels that can't withstand, you know, the onerous tax credit requirements. We're all geared toward tax credits. And that is a concern.
I think for what it's worth there, the RFP is designed to be mutually supportive of tax credit applications as well as small-scale development. We just haven't seen small-scale development applications in the last few years. So the funding has gone to tax credit projects. But that's really by virtue of the applications received, not necessarily because we're trying to exclude or have been actively excluding small-scale development. I think we actually really see that as a gap in the portfolio.
And I would just want to add into that that we did have an RFP for homeownership development that went out last year.
And thank you, Ben. I was just going to say the same thing. One other thing, because I've had many developers ask me this in the last week, we shifted our schedule to, again, respond to concerns from developers last year that we were informing people too close to the QAP deadline. So we did sort of shift things so that things are happening earlier this year. And now I'm getting concerns about people not being ready to submit. And so one thing we did last year, and we will do this again this year, if we don't commit all of the funding, if we don't get enough good projects that feels like they can use the money and create projects that are aligned with the home goals, we will accept applications on a rolling basis after this round and fund projects if we have funding available. So I know that's been a concern I've fielded several times this week.
Okay, any other comments or questions on the home funds? Okay, thank you, Ben. We are down to, where are we? Lost my agenda. Agenda item number 7, which is the discussion on equity, poverty, and urban stress, and the Tucson Equity Data Strategy. Allison?
Sure. Yeah. Hi, I'm Allison Miller. I work at HCD in planning and community engagement. I'm excited that Laura Sharp has joined us today. Where'd Laura go? Okay, there she is. From the Office of Equity. So wanted to take this opportunity. Jay requested kind of an update on the Tucson Equity Data Strategy from the Equity Office. And we've also been working on kind of an update to Mayor and Council for the what HCD has been maintaining for several years called the Poverty and Urban Stress Report. So kind of wanted to combine those all into one update. Kind of get some input and then have a little bit of a discussion. But I know we're strapped for time, so I'll be super fast. So just, you know, wanted to acknowledge, right, the commission. It's in the commission's charter, and the Housing Desegregation Subcommittee has been talking for a while about equity issues, especially related to housing, and that data and measurement is a big part of that. So kind of right before the language of equity, the city of Tucson, starting as early as 2007, I feel like I've heard that there were reports earlier than that, created what we've called the Poverty and Urban Stress Report. I'm going to share my screen really fast. And that's kind of been a place where we have tracked indicators of poverty and urban stress over time in the city. So kind of started with these written reports. Someone can maybe just pop in the chat this link, or I can do it later. These all kind of sit on this website now, which you can peruse at your leisure. But it includes the written reports that we've developed over the years. The latest one was the 2020 report. And that had included several indicators of poverty and urban stress, and, you know, maps and comparisons across wards. But that uses 5-year ACS data. And so to kind of be able to compare apples to apples, we kind of can't update that more than every 5 years. And so as part of the 2020 update, we worked on these kind of interactive mapping tools, which you can find here, that include those indicators, but as a in a more kind of interactive format. And we're using these kind of ESRI estimates as, not using ACS data, using the ESRI updates to be able to be a little bit more up to date and show annual comparisons. So again, please, you know, this is a tool that still exists, that is available for community members to use to kind of drill down into different areas and kind of see how their census tract or their ward compares to others over time. But I want to give more time to Laura to talk about the Tucson equity data strategy, because I really, right, that feels like the new updated, really exciting evolution of our conversations about data and equity. So I'm going to turn it over to Laura.
Hey, just trying to share my screen real quick. Hi, everyone. I am Laura Sharp. I'm the Equity Data Project Manager in the Office of Equity. And as Allison said, I've been working on something called the Tucson Equity Data Strategy. This was kind of spurred by my work when I was at Housing and before that at IT, working on the poverty and urban stress, trying to get all of that data to people in a format that they could use. Now that I'm in the Office of Equity, we also need to make sure that all of our departments have the data they need to start incorporating equity into their work. So the Tucson Equity Data Strategy is made up of 4 different resources that are designed to get data into the hands of staff, but also community members who want to use data in their own work in the community. The Equity Priority Index is, teds.tucsonaz.gov. The website is technically live, but it's still a work in progress. So there will be more there, but there's already some stuff that you can start poking around and looking at if you want. The Equity Priority Index is the thing that I think might be the most useful to the people here. An Equity Index, these are not new to the city of Tucson. We already have at least 3 of these in operation, the Tree Equity Index, DTM's Equity Priority Communities, and HCD's Neighborhood Vulnerability Index. All of these are just different ways of slicing and dicing data to look at vulnerable communities. The problem with these is that none of them are being maintained, so they're all orphaned data sets, and they all define vulnerable populations slightly differently. So there's no clear consensus on what the city of Tucson means when we say marginalized, underserved, or vulnerable populations. So the Tucson Equity Priority Index is designed to be maintained through a data automation process so that this will be updated annually. Regardless of whether I'm here or not, that script will just keep running. It will be available in all geographies, so census tracts and block groups, but also neighborhoods, wards, precincts, annexations, Thrive in the 05, and available at the across Pima County. It uses variables from the indices that the city already uses, so we're not pulling the rug out from under anyone, but in addition to some other variables that we thought were important, it can be customized. So if you have topic specific equity index that you want to see, like housing, you can work with us to create a more custom index. It's also based in part on community input. So these are the variables that go into the index. There are 12 of them. You can see that housing cost burden is one of our sub indices within this. And I can go into, you know, how these were chosen. We compared it to existing indices, including the ones we already use, but also indices used at the national level. We wanted data that was readily available and would not be, you know, going away anytime soon so that this can be maintained. We're focusing on social vulnerability and not opportunity. And that's so that we can compare it to different resources across the community. And we asked for input through a survey. So some of you may be familiar, we did a first survey to kind of make sure that we were on the right track with the variables that went into it. And now we have another survey. This is the final one for the index. And that will be using a method to get weights so that the community is really helping us prioritize where, you know, what communities we want to prioritize. So I would really love it if everyone in this call could take it, if you could share it as experts in what our community needs. Your input is very important. We see this being used in at least two ways. One, just simply overlaying your data of interest with the equity index. This is an example of bus stops that don't have shelters. So let's say we have a small pot of money to focus on improving bus stops that don't have shelters. So we can look at just the bus stops that are in high priority communities, which is the second map. Or we can filter that further to the high priority communities that also have a lot of people who don't have access to a personal vehicle. The other way we can do this is by combining it with other data sets to create more customized indices. So for housing, this might be different affordable housing opportunities or housing conditions. Eviction, whatever it is that you think needs to be considered. And those can be weighted as well. So this is an example of digital equity, where equity, the index can play a large or a small role in your overall index. Moving on, we also have equitable data collection standards. So that's helping people understand how to ask questions when you're collecting data about people and from people, and just making sure that we're using the most inclusive language and the best practices for collecting that kind of data. The Equity Open Data Hub, this is part of that data automation process where we'll be providing census data in all of our geometries, like wards and neighborhoods. And those will be updated whenever the data is updated or whenever our geometries are updated. So if we redistrict or annex, that data will be updated. This will save a lot of people a lot of time who don't know how to, you know, apportion census data into these different areas. And finally, we have a demographic lookup app. This is for people who don't know anything about data, but they need to find out about an area for a grant and they just need some really quick information. So that will be available again internally and to the public. Looking ahead, thinking about how this relates to housing, we'll be finalizing the primary pieces of the equity data strategy in January. The office overall will be beginning to draft the citywide equity action plan. As part of that, we'll have things called equity indicators. So what is it that we want to hold the city accountable for? And that some of those will be housing related, and we really need to hear from you and the housing department on what those metrics are that you want to be measuring and tracking. We anticipate presenting that to mayor and council in the late fall. And at some point, I'm not sure on whether that will be part of the overall EAP process or something that comes later, but will be working with individual departments on their own equity action plans and what it is that they want to be tracking and holding themselves accountable for. So that's all I have to say. Happy to answer questions.
Thanks, Laura. And I just wanted to jump into, right, part of the question was about how will TEDS be used to track housing equity yes. and measure progress. And I think you touched on it, right? But when we had this conversation with Larice, right, she really identified, Larice Walker is our chief equity officer. She really identified that kind of defining housing equity is a really important task first, and that really needs to be done with this commission. And so she is willing and ready to facilitate a conversation. She thinks it needs to be a fairly long conversation. And so I just wanted to like put that out there as you guys are thinking about a retreat and things like that and visioning for the future. So I just kind of wanted to throw that out there and then open it up for questions and comments.
Thank you, Marianne.
This is really promising. So yeah, very, very good. I think with housing equity, there's a whole bunch of stuff in there. So I think a separate conversation, not just at the retreat, is going to be needed because there's legal barriers, you know, to housing equity. There's, you know, zoning, racial inequity, water. I mean, all of that is part of that discussion with housing equity. And I really do appreciate Allison, the fact that having a separate conversation about this is going to happen because there's a lot to it. And one of the places you can start looking at is, I don't know if you're familiar with the Morrison Institute, but they have a lot of work that they've done on some of these barriers. And I know the director, Andrea Whitsett, and I think, you know, I can make introductions if you want, but, she has a lot of data that may be helpful. And she has focused on Pima County. They have in their work, and then they just got a very large $3 or $4 million grant from HUD, and they're going to be working with the Drachman Institute. And so they're going to be focusing in the Southwest more. So I think, this is a really good segue of, you know, opportunity actually to start talking to them and, share information and data and progress.
Oh, I love this I love data. I'm a data geek. Not necessarily do I know what I'm doing. I just like looking at all our stuff, right? So, but with that said, I'm with the Pima County Community Land Trust, and we're about to hire, hopefully, a stewardship person. So we're going to do a lot of handholding and communication with our homeowners and our tenants. And we do want to do some kind of a survey. Is that something that we can talk to you about? You were mentioning like the standard kind of questions type of thing, so that we're kind of, and that would help you. Hopefully this would be maybe some data that we could provide you. Is that something that you guys would be willing to help us with, is to kind of create the survey?
Yeah, right. Definitely. That's what the purpose is, to provide best practices for anyone who's interested.
So will we just contact you, Laura, or you, Allison, or how do we go about it?
I'm happy, yeah, to have you contact me or Allison.
Perfect. Thank you. That's it.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to say I also think this is very promising, and I look forward to digging into this a little bit more and talking with everyone about you know, what are the things that are coming out of the work that you just presented to us that we want to measure going forward? You know, like what are the real important housing equity indicators that we'd like to see movement on over time? So anyway, it's great. And I look forward to digging into this more and exploring this with y'all at the equity department and with the commission as well. So thank you.
I had a question, Jim.
Oh, yeah, I'll Kenny and then I'll call you next.
Thanks. I just wanted to share that I'll be working with that team. I'm part of the team for the Arches grant. So excited to see all this information being shared and yeah, wanting to, as we get situated, to know more about the city's data and work together. To make that useful for the city and the commission as well.
Thank you, Tisha.
Yeah, sorry, thank you. I was wondering, I first of all, I love the participatory nature of the Social Vulnerability Index. I think that's absolutely key. I'd be interested in knowing why there wasn't a participatory side on an opportunity index, or whether you believe the vulnerability and opportunity to be one and the same in collecting from that qualitative data for folks. That was one question. The other was, I'd be interested in knowing what, I think there are plenty of us on here that can also suggest some national resources that have already looked at data through an equity lens, and the Joint Center, I believe, for Housing Studies at Harvard University is one that I go to regularly and that has quite a bit in regards to equity. So, you know, not only utilizing that qualitative input from the community members themselves on what would constitute vulnerability in their neighborhoods or opportunity in their neighborhoods, but also some of those, you know, international or federal standards that look at certain indicators to measure equity in neighborhoods.
Yeah, so we wanted to focus on vulnerability for this index because we wanted it to really be about just the people rather than the sort of access to resources. So this allows us to create possibly an opportunity index later on that really measures things like access to schools, grocery stores, job opportunities. And then we can combine those to look at where do we have vulnerable populations who also have low access to opportunities. And by keeping these separate, we can, we really just have a little bit more control over those, but those might someday be brought together into one index. But for now, we just wanted to focus on just one piece of that puzzle. But that might be something that we will do going forward. And if we do, then we would make that a participatory process as well.
Good. Any other thoughts or comments on this agenda item before we move to the next one? All right. Thank you, Allison and Laura. Very good presentation. Agenda item number 8 is the retreat doodle poll results. So I'm not sure if that's Neto. Are you going
that's,
to do that?
That's me. No, just take a couple of minutes. Thank you, commissioners, for responding to the doodle poll. Doodle poll. The top two dates, as you now know, are February 2nd and February 9th, both Fridays from 12 all afternoon. You know, commission could decide, but should decide today. And to add to that, as Jim indicated at the outset of the meeting, Mayor Romero indicated that she would like to participate in the meeting, and her scheduling manager gave us February 2nd as the date that she can participate at the outset of the retreat at 12 noon. So that's it, Jim.
Okay, so the question is, so we have 10 commissioners who said they can participate on the 9th. Only 7 said they could participate on the 2nd. So we have the decision that needs to be made here is it better to have the mayor attend or to have more of the commissioners attend? Or we want to go back and take another look at it and try to pick a different date. I think those are the 3 options. So is there anybody here on this meeting today who cannot attend on the 2nd of this of February?
Jim, this is Lori. I can attend either, but I guess my question is, if the mayor comes, is she going to stay for a significant part of the retreat? Because if she is just going to come, make some remarks and leave, I would prefer there be more commissioners available. So looking at the 9th, but if she's planning on staying for a significant part of time, I mean, that feels important.
Lori, commissioners, the message from the office was that she could be available from 12 to 12:30.
So I guess the question is, are there any commissioners here who said no to the 2nd? Oh, Marianne, I didn't see your hand. Go ahead.
I agree with Lori. If it's only going to be for a half hour and we're really going to be in working intensely, I think that all of the more commissioners and somebody's got a thumbs up going through here too, whoever that was. Jay agrees.
Okay. Are there, the question I had was, are there any commissioners here who said they can't make it on the 2nd? Who can adjust their plans to make it on the 2nd with this new information? Because I don't know who said yes or no to which dates.
Having problems hearing Jim. What are the dates?
December 9th and December, I'm sorry, February 9th and February 2nd.
2nd or 7th?
2nd.
2, okay.
2.
February 9th is no good for me, so 2nd is it.
Okay. Kenny?
Sorry, could you clarify the time again from noon until?
From noon until 6 p.m. is what we have reserved. Is that microphone better, by the way?
Yes.
Okay, sorry about that. Noto, do you have access to the doodle poll to see who couldn't attend on the 2nd?
Let me look it up.
Yeah, I like the direction you're going with this, Jim. I agree with the more commissioners making it, but double checking to see if of the people who wrote on the doodle that they can't make it to see if they can with the new information.
That sounds Yeah, I don't know that information was available when we did the doodle poll, and maybe, you know.
This is Maggie, and I may have said no to Fridays because I just don't like Fridays, but I'm available. I don't know if I did that. I don't remember what I wrote.
So the question again is, Jim, is what commissioners?
Who said yes to the 9th, but no to the 2nd?
Betty Villegas, Lori, Mindy, Jay.
Jay and Lori, you guys are,
I can do either.
You can do either?
Yeah.
Marianne indicated she cannot do the 2nd, but can do the 9th.
I can do either, but I think it might be worth asking the commission how they feel about having less members for a half an hour with the mayor. I just think it might be a good poll to ask. We're not going to have a lot of FaceTime with her, and I think it's important that the first time we're getting together to really work on stuff, that we have as many commission members present as possible.
I agree with you. The reason I'm trying to go through this is to see if with this information, if any schedules can be adjusted so we do get the members and we get the mayor there. Because I think, you know, one of the advantages of having the mayor is we can hear from her where, you know, going into the meeting where she thinks our priorities and goals should be. I think it's difficult for us to set our goals on our own. We really need direction from mayor and council and the city to help us with that. So I do think they're both important. So I guess Jay and Marianne, are either of you able to attend on the 2nd of February?
I can do both. Yeah.
You can do both. Okay.
And yeah, I wonder, like you, I mean, I may have just picked the day that I preferred the most, not if I could do either. You know, I don't remember. Maybe we should re-poll with the new information, and I don't know.
Marianne?
I don't think we need to re-poll. It's enough time that I can probably move this meeting that's right smack in the middle of all this.
Okay. So Neto, there was Marianne, Jay, was it Lori?
Mindy and Lori.
Mindy and Lori.
Mm-hmm.
So Lori, are you able to make the 2nd work?
I can. I come in late the night before, but I can make it work.
Okay. Okay. So it's Mindy, but Mindy said no to both dates, correct?
No, she said no to the 2nd.
No to the 2nd. Okay. I will follow up with her. And if she says she can make it on the 2nd, then is everybody okay with us just scheduling it for that date?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, then we'll do that. So I will take that as an action item here as soon as we're done with this meeting. Okay. Agenda item number 9 is, again, about the retreat. So Anne's going to open. I think we're going to introduce our facilitators. So Anne, why don't you go ahead and take it away?
Yeah, and I know we don't have a ton of time today, but I feel like it's really important as we go into the retreat to hear from commissioners and really do some pre-work so that we can use that day and that time to be as valuable as possible. Really excited that Tani and Colleen are here with us today. I think they've met many of you, but they can do an intro. One thing I will say really quickly, I think that the agenda today, it was really an agenda that I think, having worked with many, many different commissions, really was a good mix of agenda items that you all brought forward. And we're really interested in hearing about, like the equity item, like the housing trust fund item. And in my mind, moving forward, I also think it's really important. You all have varied experiences that we really value. And so as HCD, as our department continues to take on new initiatives or refine the work we have, to really get your input on our work as well. And so just throwing that out there, as you head into the retreat, really excited to take the time. It's been 2 years now that you all have been meeting, and really just sort of reflect on what's working, what's not working. And I'd like to see really, personally, I think what's worked really well with other commissions is both proactive interest and on agenda items and initiatives from commission, as well as us taking items to you for input. More I can say, but I know we're sort of short on time, so I want to make sure Colleen and Tani have a chance to introduce themselves and share their thoughts.
Thanks, Anne, and good evening, everybody. Thank you so much for the opportunity to be here. Is Tani? Oh, there you are, Tani. Hi, I didn't see you. Can we hear you?
Hopefully, can you all hear me?
We can hear you loud and clear.
Good.
So I'll just take a minute maybe to kind of introduce us and a little bit about us and our role, just literally a minute. Again, Colleen Whitaker and Tani Robertson, we are with Southwest Decision Resources. We're a facilitation and collaboration group. We're based in Arizona. Tani and I are based in Tucson. We work across Arizona and across the Southwest. We work on community issues, urban planning issues, strategic planning. We've had the pleasure of working with the city in a number of capacities. We're currently working with Planning and Development Services team on Plan Tucson, the general plan update, the public and partner engagement components of that. We also facilitate the Complete Streets Coordinating Council and have done so for 3 or 4 years. And we just recently completed a retreat similar to kind of what we would do with you, a retreat with the Climate, Energy, and Sustainability Commission. So we're really excited to be working with you all on this and to kind of help you through this retreat and kind of find clearer direction. And as Anne and Jim and others have said, just identifying those priorities and goals and kind of efficiencies and ways to be most effective and valuable in your role and your partnership with the city. Tani, do you want to add anything?
No, I think you covered it really well. We'll be looking forward to talking with you in the month leading up to it, and learning as much as we can about your issues and your concerns and your thoughts and ideas so that we can really make the most of the retreat.
For sure. Thanks. And we have, we've been working kind of getting grounded in your context and your needs and issues, et cetera, with Jim and Jay and somewhat with Ray as well. And so we're getting steeped in that. We had the opportunity to meet with the Housing Desegregation Subcommittee last week and talk a lot about issues, priorities, concerns, what's working, what's not. And we would like to have similar sessions with the other two subcommittees in January, so ahead of the retreat. We're also in the final stages of just final revisions on a survey that we'll be sending out to all of you, commission members and ex officio city staff, to really get a better handle ahead of time and really start teeing up those issues so we can frame the retreat agenda around kind of what we learn from that survey. So we'll make it as quick and painless as possible, but we would really appreciate your thoughtful feedback on that when you do see it. So yeah, super excited to work with you guys, and we've got the second and the ninth free and saved, and we'll be there either day. Jim, I know there's a little bit less time than maybe we had thought, so I'll look to you for kind of how you want to handle the next bit.
Well, I think we should, just from my process perspective, so we're going to have our next commission meeting January, let's see here, 4th? No.
Correct.
January 4th. Yeah, January 4th. So, and that might be, there's also a commission meeting scheduled on the 8th. So if we do our retreat on the 2nd, we've got one more full commission meeting. We've got the holidays coming up. So I know the Housing First and the Housing Desegregation Subcommittees, we are not going to be meeting next month because of the holidays. I question whether the Affordable Housing Subcommittee should meet that month, next month as well, or this month. But we're not going to have a ton of time. So I think just from a process perspective, Colleen and they're going to participate in this next subcommittee meetings, which will have the January subcommittee meetings. They're going to also be attending our January full commission meeting. I think between now and our next commission meeting, is that survey that you guys prepared going to go out between now and our next commission meeting?
Yes.
Okay. So I think that's something that everybody needs to be paying attention on and looking for is a survey that's going to come out that's going to have like 12 to 15 questions. And I'd like everybody to, take their time and try to put some thought into what you would like to see from the commission moving forward in terms of goals and focus areas and things like that. We're gonna get out of this what we put into it. So that survey is going to be coming out here in the next week or two. I think the next full commission meeting, we're going to talk about some of the preliminary findings on that survey, correct? And then, we'll start to fine tune it leading into the retreat. So is there any comments or questions on it from a process perspective? Does that make sense to everybody? Okay. Any other final comments, Andy, anything else you want to say?
The one thing I think to be thinking about, and I think as Allison mentioned, I think having a good working definition of equity when it comes to housing equity is something that I just throwing out there that I think has been a topic for quite a while. The other thing, just an FYI, and it's really up to you all. I know that there have been discussions of this. I know the retreat will be in person. Mayor and council recently made a change to commission options that there is now moving forward. There is now an option if commissions want to do a hybrid meeting. I know that there's been discussions of whether or not the commission should be in person and really sort of losing some of the ability to communicate. But I know there's been concerns in terms of health and vulnerability. So throwing that out there is things that I think could be worth discussing during the commission, during the retreat.
That's good. Okay, any other final comments before we move to the subcommittee updates? All right. Well, thank you, Tani and Colleen. Appreciate you guys joining us today.
Thank you.
Hopefully you're still excited about what you signed up for.
We are indeed. Yeah, thanks very much for the opportunity. We'll have happy holidays and we'll see you all in your next meeting.
All right, thank you. Okay, agenda item number 10 is the subcommittee update. So first one is the Housing First, Tisha. Any updates?
Yes. So we did meet and we received information on the Tier 2 encampment site. So there was a question on, after we reviewed the protocol for Tier 1, 2, and 3, we had questions on the number of and the status of the Tier 2 site. So we did receive information from Sarah on that. Sarah also provided an update, a Housing First, or actually I think Netto provided the Housing First program update, and then also kind of a longstanding, outstanding issue was also covered, and that was on the vacant lot that the city owned. So we had that discussion in the presentation, and then we decided we weren't going to meet in December because December 26th is our regular scheduled meeting. We are continuing to look for a date in January that will work, so those emails are still going around, but we'll make sure that we'll have a January meeting so that the facilitators have an opportunity to see what the Housing First subcommittee does. And that's all, Jim.
Thank you. Any questions for Tisha? All right, housing desegregation, Jay.
Thanks, Jim. We met with the facilitators, Tani and Colleen, and just talked about our experiences, our hopes, challenges, and what we are hoping to get out of the retreat that we're going to have in February. And that was really about it. So we had a productive meeting, and it was great to meet them and interact with the facilitators. And I think we're excited about what's coming up in February.
Good. Thank you, Jay. Any questions? Affordable housing did not meet this last month, I don't believe. I was not there if they did. So I don't think the affordable housing has any updates. Those members who are on the affordable housing subcommittee, do you all want to meet on the 20th? Does that work for everybody? Kenny, Marianne, Ray?
Yeah, it works for me. Oh, wait, let me just double check.
December 20?
December 20th, yes.
Yeah.
I can make that as well.
Okay. Given that I think missed our last two, I think that I'm going to suggest that we keep that meeting then.
Yeah,
I'm available too.
Okay. All right, so great.
I don't have it on my cat. Oh, because I'm in February. Sorry.
It's there.
Okay, so as we talked about, the next commission meeting is on January 4th, and then on February 8th, Affordable Housing Subcommittee is going to meet December 20th, and then Housing First and Housing Desegregation are going to skip this month. We've had one agenda item suggested for our next meeting, and that is a follow-up of the recommendations made to Mayor and Council and what the current status is, and we've heard on some of those. Was that what you were going to talk about, Anne?
No, I think Neto's going to talk about what I was going to talk about.
Okay, so before we adjourn, I just want to put a call out for any other agenda items we'd like to have in our next meeting.
Marianne sent me an agenda item. She sent me two suggestions.
Let's hear it.
Marianne, you want to go ahead and...
No, you got to go.
Oh, okay. So one is city staff item. She'd like a further clarification on the use of repayments of home loans and the interest gained on them, and review of approved recommendations to city council and progress of each of them. Those are the two. Since I have the floor, let me have one more minute. I'm going to send out emails to the commission to ask about schedules for 2024. If everyone is comfortable with the current schedule, please let me know, because I do have to start scheduling for next year. And the last item is that we have tentatively set our next AmFi public listening session for our proposed AmFi Resource Center on Keene Road at the former Fire Station 8 in the AmFi district. The meeting will be held, again, tentatively on January 31st from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Salvation Army Gym on Prince Road, just east of Stone. When we confirm with Salvation Army, we'll send out invitation to the commission. Hope you can attend. We had a robust meeting last month at AmFi Middle School, and we continue to engage with the community about this proposal.
And on that, just Tisha, correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is we're going to have an agenda item on the next Housing First subcommittee to describe more about this project. So feel free to attend that if you want to learn more first.
Yes.
Thank you, Ian. That's correct.
Thank you.
Jason?
As discussed earlier in Ben's presentation, we'll need a pretty considerable amount of time on the January 4 agenda for the presentations from affordable housing development applicants, and then the committee or the commission's evaluation of those presentations.
Okay. Kenny?
Yeah, I was going to ask about those presentations. Will we get any more guidance on how to evaluate those, or should we just refer to the RFP language?
Yeah, so we will, we can email out to the commission as part of the agenda packet, kind of a simple summary of each of the projects, as well as sort of the scoring rubric that will be used. There are a handful of very specific factors that we're asking the applicants to present on and for you to evaluate the extent to which those are satisfactory and impactful in the community. So we'll include that all in the agenda items for you.
Perfect. Ray?
I have a future agenda item. We talked before about having a discussion about after the projects, but there was an issue with the document where it wasn't accessible. I'm wondering if it's possible to get an accessible version of that document and then to re-enter that as an agenda item.
What was the agenda item again? I'm not clear. Yeah,
it was the chapter called from the book After the Projects, and it was had been a book group that HCD had organized. They had had a discussion about that chapter, especially in thinking about reflecting on changes in public housing. It's a chapter about the history of public housing in Tucson. And it talks a lot from the direct experiences of people who were living in public housing at the time.
Right. And the issue is that we need to get the text enlarged.
It wasn't just enlarged, it was that it wasn't available, it wasn't accessible to a screen reader. So
yes.
I think Vicky had given some directions on how to do it. I think some of it was actually just like a cleaner photocopy.
Okay, we'll get back to Vicky on that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else before we adjourn? All right, everyone, it's 5:58. We finished on time. So everyone have a great holiday if we don't talk before.
Thank you.